Good morning. It's April 5th. It is a pretty decent morning in New York City as we work our way around to a springtime that feels like springtime. And this is your Indignity Morning Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Skoka, taking a look at the day and the news. The lead story in this morning's New York Times is that Joe Biden, as the paper says, threatened on Thursday to condition future support for Israel on how it addresses his concerns about civilian casualties and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Mr. Biden, the Times writes, for the first time, leveraged U.S. aid to influence the conduct of the war against Hamas. For the first time. Closing in on the six-month mark of the war, hours after Biden, for the first time, suggested that our highly dependent ally might face consequences for its ongoing wholesale violation of the laws of war, Israel opened more routes for aid to enter the enclave where it's been systematically starving 2 million people. Who could have guessed that a policy of something other than completely unrestricted support might have the power to change Israel's behavior? Besides everyone who's not in the White House or Congress. Anyway, baby steps. The kind of steps babies take if their legs haven't been blown off. On the opposite side of the front page is a story about how neither Joe Biden nor Donald Trump is supplying any sort of detailed information about their health, as the two oldest people ever to be president compete to become president again. Neither one in particular is going to take, let alone share the results of, any serious cognitive test. Although really, what's the point as long as they're running against each other? Maybe Robert F. Kennedy Jr. can take a cognitive test for both of them. There are subsections under the headings The Unknowns About Mr. Biden's Fitness and The Unknowns About Mr. Trump's Fitness. But in writing the latter section, the Times appears to have forgotten what Donald Rumsfeld would call a known unknown, skipping entirely over the episode in Trump's presidency when he was rushed to Walter Reed Hospital on a weekend, claimed afterward that he had simply, on the spur of the moment, decided to get his routine physical, and then went on Twitter to very strangely, specifically deny that he had suffered a series of mini-strokes and never elaborated any further. Seems like the sort of thing that a well-resourced newspaper with a large Washington operation might dig into and clear up. But before you can explain what happened, you have to remember that it did happen. Down at the bottom of the page, there's a story about how Donald Trump's hotel business has collapsed, and he's now being kept afloat by the Saudi money that is poured into golf events at his various golf courses. A spokesperson for the Saudi Golf Concern told the Times that its choice of venues was strictly dictated by the championship-level quality of Trump golf courses, the speed with which the Trump family, as a private owner, could move to approve their use, and resistance to the Saudis by professional golf elsewhere in the United States. The story actually refers to the Saudi Golf Venture by its name, which is spelled capital L, capital I, capital V, and lies beyond the outer limit of what I'm personally going to Google and watch a video to try to figure out how to say. Up top on the jump page about the Saudi golf money, the headline is State Attorney General Questions Qualifications of Trump's Bondsman, which is a rather indirect way of saying that the company that posted Trump's appellate bond is not licensed to post bonds in New York State, and the qualifications of the bondsman are only being questioned in the context of the larger question of whether the bond is valid at all. Returning to page one, right above the index, is a very bafflingly constructed story. Spraying vitriol, parents in New York clash over what's taught. New York City, the Times reports, has never been immune to heated education fights, but in recent months those fights have taken on a new level of vitriol and aggression and expanded to focus on a broader menu of divisive issues. The battles reflect the nation's growing political divide, even in this deep blue city, as parents layer old debates, how issues of race and discrimination are taught in schools, for example, over newer ones, such as the role of transgender students in sports and how schools should address the Israel-Hamas war. Parents have shouted over one another, called one another bigots, and hang on, I am a parent of two New York City public school students, and I have no idea what the paper is talking about. In no respect has parental vitriol or aggression showed up in and around my children's schools. And it's not until well after the jump, in the 13th paragraph of the story, after endless generalities about the national mood and education policy, that it turns out that actually there's just some asshole from Moms for Liberty who's raising hell in District 2 by trying to attack trans youth participation in sports, and also in the estimation of Stuyvesant students, using deeply hurtful rhetoric toward minority groups on social media. But because the Times believes in its core that right-wing provocations are representative of great meaningful social trends, instead of a clean story about how this asshole is making people's lives miserable and trying to force an unwanted agenda on schools, the Times wraps up this specific problem in a lot of blather from experts about the national political landscape and the galvanization of conservatism in response to the COVID pandemic, and scrapes together a dog's breakfast of unrelated things, such as arguments over ceasefire resolutions, and a Staten Island school apparently throwing books with non-white subjects in the trash to manifest the culture war that the editors so desperately want to be real. That is the news, or what passes for the news. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to Indignity to keep us going. And if all goes well, we will talk again on Monday.